Memo to the politicians and money whores ruining our medical systems, medicine is an art, as well as a science. So, from this intuitive knowledge, I ordered a CAT scan. He really did not, objectively, meet any criteria for ordering one. But I said, whoever's on the table, yank them off. Get them out of the scanner, I want this one in, stat. So, he goes in, and the radiologist calls back, stat, and says, Dr. Greer, this man has a massive astrocytoma, a big brain tumor, that was herniating the brain stem. Now, here's what was happening. All of his symptoms were because the brain stem was being pushed through the opening at the base of the skull, the foramen magnum, and it was putting pressure on the area that controls temperature regulation, nausea, etc. So, he was having all these symptoms of fever and chills and nausea, but it was all due to this tumor and its strange presentation. The shape of this tumor was such that it wasn't affecting any specific sensory or motor function. It was a very atypical situation. It was serious enough that, with this kind of pressure being built up in the brain, it eventually would have herniated the brain stem, cut off the respiratory and heart center, and he would have suddenly died. I immediately referred him to neurosurgery for stat decompression. We had to helicopter him, actually, to another facility. Dr. Greer, why did you think this patient had a brain tumor? I would have never suspected it with his presentation. I would have never even gotten the CAT scan. The neurosurgeon told me. Oh, I just had a hunch, I said. The truth is that it was a type of sensing, the pop culture would say remote viewing. It was an intuitive knowing, because the symptom complex, if any, thing, would have led me into a facile diagnosis of the flu, and I would have treated and streeted, as we say. But if I had not followed my inner knowing, in less than 12 hours he would have been dead. As it turned out, he had neurosurgery and it was successful. We really can bring this kind of capacity and knowledge into our careers, even though we're not supposed to, and particularly those of us who are hard science people. In science and medicine, this sort of thing is very frowned upon. And yet, I have found that there are a number of physicians who have had similar experiences that they won't talk about openly for fear of ridicule. Another time there were two code blues going on at once. Well, I'm one doctor and I've got two people who literally have had their hearts stopped. The one we had been working on first had been in arrest a long time. Then another one came in. The first patient was in a type of rhythm that is fatal if you don't get them out of that rhythm. We'd used everything that could be used, cardioversion, all the medicines, everything. I won't go into the gory, technical details. The fact is, it wasn't working. Finally, we were going to have to call the code, end it. But I just sensed that this person could get back into a normal rhythm. So I put my awareness on the heart, visualized the conduction system of the heart, and called on this higher power, the power of God. And mentally visualized and willed his heart going back into a normal beat. And it did, at that instant. Now, it may have been a coincidence. Some of the skeptics would say, well, these other things kicked in. But I don't think so. It was very specific. But it was out of necessity, do or die, literally. So when you have to do it, and you call on the divine power in the universe, and it is urgent, heart, felt and done with a pure heart, almost anything is possible. When you have to do it, then suddenly you find this ability, by turning within to the power of God, to do it. A number of things like that happened over the course of my medical career and actually continue to happen. A few years ago I was drifting outside Helena, Montana. It was before we moved here to Virginia, and I wanted to move my family from North Carolina to someplace. And I wasn't sure where. So I was driving around Montana, exploring the area. All of a sudden I found myself driving along in broad daylight and I saw what I call an image override. It's like you have two screens, like a screen within a screen on TV. As I was driving down the road, in my mind I saw an intersection in broad daylight with a terrible traffic accident, where I knew there'd be fatalities. It wasn't vague. I said to myself, This is going to happen. I'm going to come across this soon. So, I started looking around the car for what I might have in the way of any medical items, even a straw if I had to make an airway or anything. About an hour later, I was at an intersection on the east side of Glacier National Park, in the middle of nowhere. It was one of these dangerous highway intersections where it was a stop on a busy highway, and someone just didn't stop. A Suburban went through the intersection and T-boned a Ford Taurus rental vehicle that had a German couple in it. When I got there, the elderly couple in the Taurus were dead at the scene, both of them. And the other people in the Suburban were very seriously injured and pinned under the dashboard. So, I focused on helping the survivors in the Suburban. Finally, a rural paramedic crew came along, and we all worked to stabilize them. Then as I was doing this, I looked up and I saw the mountain that I had seen in my dream a week before I traveled to Montana. One evening I had a dream where there was a mountain that reminded me of the shape of the Mount of Temptation in Israel, outside Jericho. I clearly saw a scintillating light, like a spirit, over this mountain. The dream experience was very spiritual, but there was no other message or image, and I thought, how strange. After helping the survivors, I connected with God and said a prayer to send the deceased man and woman to the highest level spiritually and to connect with God. As I did that, I looked up and saw a beautiful white light appear above the mountain at the exact moment that I was connecting their souls to God. And then it was clear to me that this was why I went to Montana, to be there at that moment in time, but beyond time, because it was also eternal. I was there for that purpose, and to also help these two other people, who did survive. We got a chopper in there, but they could only take one patient, and I had to decide which one was going by chopper. The one who had to go by ground could have died. I prayed I made the right choice. You have to be willing to follow your guidance and the intuition you get, and you have to be willing to act. I've done that throughout my medical career, no matter what the situation. And I recommend that people accept that responsibility. It is accepting your power and then accepting the responsibility that goes with that power. I've spoken, since then, to a number of people who've been fighter pilots or who have been commercial airline pilots in a critical situation where they've had similar pre-cognitive experiences that helped them avoid disaster. Many people have these experiences in their lives. And the more critical or stressful the work is, the more likely this type of ability might be called upon. But I think it can be brought into almost everything you do. This can be a way of life, and not something that you do just on the side occasionally. The understanding of spirituality and divinity need not be reserved for an hour or two on Sunday or an occasional event here and there. It can be an inner awakening that is with us all the time, and called up and applied all the time. There may be a ritual or a service that does something for you, but the reality is that the conscious connection to the unbounded divine state is something that can be cultured and lived and brought into everything that we are doing at all times. That's a discipline and way of living where we are always connected to spirit and living in that state. Once the nephew of one of our nurses was brought into the ER because he had been hit head on by a pick-up truck while riding a motorcycle. It was a stormy, horrible day. He was very critical, and basically had the same injury that killed Princess D, which was a ruptured thoracic aorta, often not survivable. I began working on him with the great nurses we had, and somehow I sensed that he had a ruptured aorta. We took a chest X-ray. The X-ray was rather ambiguous, but I felt that it confirmed my sensing this injury. Well, the general surgeon on call came in and said, "Oh, he wouldn't be alive and look like this if he had a ruptured aorta." I said, "Man, he's got a ruptured aorta." The surgeon asked, "How do you know that?" I said, "I'm just certain that he does." So, I wrestled with this surgeon, fighting with him not to ignore it or treat him in a way that could suddenly kill him. I got him to a thoracic surgeon and CT scan of the chest, and it was then confirmed. But if we had not treated him very carefully in terms of hydration, blood pressure, everything else, we could have blown open the thoracic aorta completely and he would have died. Over and over and over again, These events happened in the year. I would love to give a course integrating medical science with intuitive knowledge. Yes, our gadgets and our technologies and sciences are wonderful, but there is also a role for the art of knowing and intuition. It is a balance and we need to regain it in every aspect of our lives. Someday we will have a civilization where people working in critical areas, no matter how material the science may seem, will also accept that there is a role to play for higher states of consciousness. When in the thick of something that serious, I find myself operating in a way where I am connecting to multiple levels at once. It's very intellectual, and there's a lot of specific scientific knowledge to call on. There are many physical, material things to do and a lot of management desi, sons to be made. Part of it is the compassion, but there is also a fierce, unrelenting determination to help that person. The nurses would tell me that if any thing happened to one of their loved ones, they'd want me to be the doc on call. It didn't necessarily come across as compassion, but that's where I was operating from. Good God, emergency situations are intense. We are not sitting around swinging crystals and counting prayer beads. If a doctor got in there and didn't know what he was doing, in my quest to protect life, I would physically remove him and say, "Out. You're killing this person. I'm taking over." So part of me is very alpha male. I was awake on these other levels as well. See, I wasn't shut off. If I got an intuitive image or some sort of a clear view of something, even though it was coming out of a non-scientific intuition, I would not rule it out. I would be open to the possibility that I needed to pursue it. It gave me an edge in situations where I really shouldn't have known to get the CAT scan for the brain tumor. I should not have known to treat that person like he had a ruptured aorta, because it was not typical or clear enough. Would catch things earlier, or find hidden problems because I was connected to this non-local, expanded and intuitive spirit that is within all of us and within all things. It is a very interesting dynamic and very nuanced. Before I started XETI, I was in my bedroom one afternoon, sitting on the side of my bed. Suddenly, I got what I call an override, an image. Again, it's like a screen within a screen. You don't lose consciousness or your view of the real world, but you also see very clearly, in full color, another scene or place. In an instantaneous packet of information, I saw Air Force One either landing or taking off from Colombia, South America. It was hit by a shoulder, held, surface, two, air missile that was fired by rogue elements within the Colombian Defense Forces that were on the payroll of the drug cartels. They were going to kill the first President Bush when he was visiting there. I saw the facility, the landing strip. I saw the grass around the field. I saw the woods on the edge of it and precisely where the missile came out. It was catastrophic. The president was killed. God, I asked, what in the world am I supposed to do with this information? I prayed for guidance. The dream lay heavily on my mind. Weeks later, Emily and I went to Washington for a medical meeting. That night, I had a dream. In this dream, I was with Barbara Bush, and she was all dressed in black and getting out of a black limousine, and we were at the funeral of the president, George Bush. I thought, oh, my God. He really is dead. An enormous heaviness came upon me. This should have been prevented. I awoke in a cold sweat and turned to Emily, telling her my nightmare. Emily is my closest friend, companion and soul, mate, and I tell her everything. I asked, what am I going to do? Call the White House and Secret Service and tell them about this? Well, why not? She asked. We continued to discuss it all day and that next evening, we got out the phone book and looked up the number for the White House. Below was a number for the Secret Service. We were amazed it was actually in the phone book. I called the number and I said, my name is Dr. Stephen Greer, and I'm an emergency doctor. I apologize, I know this is going to sound completely crazy, but I had a very clear image of an assassination attempt on the president. And it's Seri Aus. The first person I talked to said, hold on, sir. I'll forward your call. And there was a long silence, I knew they were putting me into some supercomputer database. Then, the chief of the protective detail for the president, at the White House with the Secret Service, picked up the line. I started to apologize again and he said, "Sir, we take this sort of information very seriously." I assured him, "You know, I've never done anything like this. I don't cry wolf. I met my wife in a lucid dream. I have this ability to see things in the future that come to pass. This happens spontaneously when it needs to." He was very serious and attentive and said, "Just tell me everything." So I explained, "In my dream, the president is going down to Colombia, either on take, off or landing, Air Force One is hit." I described everything, that it's an inside job and it is Colombian defense people who betray the security detail and are acting on behalf of these people who run the drug cartels. The Secret Service agent said, "What do we need to do to avoid this?" I said, "Well, if you can't get the president to cancel the trip, you need to, at the last minute, change where Air Force One lands. You need to be sure that everyone within striking distance of a shoulder-held missile is connected to your people and not Colombian. And you need to sweep the area that far out." He said, "We'll do it." Weeks later, in Newsweek, I read an article that said that, in fact, a contract for $5 million had been put out on the life of President Bush and that arms merchants in the Middle East, including Israel, had sold the drug cartels in Colombia shoulder-held missiles. This article, which came out after my vision, stated that advisors to the president were asking him to cancel this trip. It turns out, of course, he did take the trip and he wasn't killed. I was told years later by a very high intelligence official, and also a Secret Service agent, that what I had said was taken to heart, and they did make security changes. I doubt President Bush ever knew anything about it. That's when I learned that, in fact, there were some very smart and good people in the intelligence community and in the Secret Service who understand the power of consciousness. They clearly respect this type of ability. I tell people, don't be afraid of your convictions, trust them. Sometimes you have to go out on a limb. I certainly took a flyer when I made a cold call to the White House Secret Service and told them this story. But I also think this episode built credibility in these covert circles, because they knew that what I was saying was accurate information. After calling the Secret Service, that night I had another very lucid dream. Except this time I was with Barbara Bush and we were all dressed in white, and riding white horses, and everything was light and very happy. It was clear to me then that the president would be safe. I think many people receive important information in unconventional ways, but it's just not talked about. We need to make it okay to talk about these things. We need to make it okay to bring this sort of discourse, cyan in without the fear of ridicule or the opprobrium of our peers. We can do that by the dynamic force of our example, by walking the talk. Not done since 1977, the S-5 protocol. I did the protocol and invited these extraterrestrial beings to visit me. After reminding them who I was, I showed them exactly where I was located in Asheville, NC. I showed them the house and a large front yard and its exact setting. It was a three-story Tudor house, about 8,000 square feet, and set among huge beautiful trees. I showed the ETs all the details and then I went to sleep. I woke up with a beautiful craft semi, materialized out in the front yard of the house, in the wee hours of the morning, and found myself consciously floated on board. We were all in a quasi, materialized astral state, and as we floated out and went out into space I could look back and see the beautiful Earth receding away, floating in infinity. Then we went by what I am assuming was the moon. There wasn't a sign there that said, "This is the moon, welcome to the moon, population 39. But it looked like the moon to me. And there were enormous ships that were hovering over the moon. They were oval with struts that came up from a large craft with two other similar shaped oval discs above and towards the rear of the main ship. They were just floating silently along where the terminated section of the moon is, between the light and dark side of the moon. an incredible amount of energy, like magenta coal, or red plasma discharges, were going between the surface of the moon and the underbelly of these ships. They were enormous, and as we passed by I was told by these ETs that these craft were the making preparations for the coming decade or so. This happened in 1990, so it is clear that they were making preparations for major events for around the time we are in right now. We went further out into our solar system, and the experienced strands formed so that the material aspect of the ship disappeared. It was just like in 1973 when I was 18, when everything became translucent, and I was out in space without a craft around me, and yet somehow it was still there. It was very multi-dimensional, but at this point transcendence beyond linear time, space became the dominant perception. It's like the most perfect fiber optics. Imagine the walls of your room completely disappearing, even though they are there and you are still protected in a controlled environment. At that point, I went into a state of meditative awareness and transcended into unity consciousness. I was infinitely awake and the entire cosmos was awake and perfectly synchronized as one. As I entered that state, I began to gaze around the solar system and saw that every planet was surrounded by space which was filled with infinite energy and light. The empty space was actually teeming with light and energy. I could directly see the baseline energy of the universe, the field of energy and light from which the entire material cosmos emerges from infinite mind, from the Godhead. Instead of the darkness between stars and planets, there was an enormous light and energy with solid planets moving as islands of energy in this field of energy and power. Then, as I gazed at each planet, I directly perceived that each one was awake and conscious and had a specific tone and personality. Each created sphere had a very specific tone, and if I were more musically inclined I could recreate it. They were all pure tones and very specific. As I looked at Mercury I saw he was rather androgynous but more male, Venus was definitely female, Jupiter was just fantastic, and Mars is death, innately male. The Earth, definitely female. As I gazed at Earth, there was a very beautiful tone emanating from her. Remember, each planet had its own tone of creation, no two tones were alike, some much higher and some very deep and baritone, but all were beautiful tones. As I gazed at the Earth, I connected with her as an awake conscious being and she communicated to me this infinite and crushing. I use the word crushing because I couldn't tell the story for years without weeping, love. And there was a sense of melancholy also, for what was happening to her and the damage being done to her and the suffering of humanity upon her. It was profound and beyond words. It was one of the most emotional and moving experiences of my life. Earth was very clearly saying how great her love was for her children and that her purpose was to be the womb for creating life that could become enlightened and grow towards divinity. But she was also suffering tremendously from the recklessness and selfishness of her children. So there was this enormous melancholy, a sadness beyond my ability to convey in words. And yet, towards the end of our communion, she made it very clear that this suffering would not continue for much longer. Earth made it clear that this burden would be lifted suddenly. By now, I was in such a state of deep love and emotion that my heart chakra opened fully and an enormous love and celestial perception dawned. This celestial perception of the cosmos caused me to see the light of creation and all things suffused in love, the pure love of God. And as I went into that state, I heard all the distant worlds, every star and planet and the entire creation, singing as one, like a trillion tones blend, ed into the one pure tone of the creation. At that point, I transcended into a state that I cannot describe. It was a state where I heard a singular tone that was the perfectly harmonized tone of the entire creation humming, singing. It was the primal tone emanating from the earliest manifestation of relativity out of the infinite mind of God that maintains creation. It was the most beautiful experience of my life. As I transcended into that, I became one with that state and stayed within that state of being. I don't know how long I was in that condition, but know that this is what is all around us. The music of the spheres is a reality, and within the tone, One can transcend to the infinity of the cosmic being. This primal tone was an Tom, per se. I believe that is a human attempt to reproduce this ancient experience that is the perception of the sound of the primal thought emanating from the infinite being that creates the entire creation. It was on the level of the near-death experience in terms of the transformative effect it had on me. After I stayed in that state of complete unity consciousness and God consciousness, my individuality dissolved. All that existed was infinite being, and even the creation and creator were one, the same, infinite awakeness. I stayed in that state with it vibrating through me, just permeating me, for what seemed like eternity. Because I was beyond space and time, it is meaningless to talk about it in terms of how long it was. But after, I found myself relatively conscious again. Suddenly I was back in my bedroom and became aware of the glowing outside the window where the craft was. I laid there peacefully and went to sleep. The next day I learned that one of our children had a lucid dream with little ET children, who were teaching her games ET children played on their planet. This daughter did not understand the games, so she began to give the ET children rides on the back of her banana seat bicycle, up and down our driveway. This child had never heard me talk about ETs or any of these experiences. It confirmed what happened to me as real. And it became very clear to me that I was supposed to pick this whole issue up again just as I had heard 2 months earlier in January, 1990. At that point, I began wondering, what am I going to do? How am I going to do this? I decided that I would just start looking into the subject again and find out what was out there. I found out there was an organization that was having a meeting in Florida where there had been many UFO sightings, the so-called Gulf Breeze sightings near Pensacola. This meeting was in July of 1990. I had the concept of what I wanted to do, and that was create in the world interplanetary ambassadors that would be doing what is now called the S-5 initiative, the Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind initiative. I went to this meeting, and started sharing these ideas and concepts, and the right people suddenly just surfaced and came into my life mysteriously who said, no, don't do it through any existing entity, create your own reality. Then a man who had been involved in national security issues connected to this subject for years and who was a lawyer came up to me and told me what I needed to do, form an organization, hermetically seal it so it can't be penetrated. In other words, no open board and no open membership, avoid, if you can, being obscure, and as quickly as you can. Given what you are going to be doing and what your role is, get out in the public. You must let millions of people know what you are doing, otherwise you won't survive. If you are obscure, you are dead. He gave me the best advice ever. I knew that much of the information at this conference was false, that it was disinformation. I immediately recognized that. Then, in August of 1990, I was in the upstairs den adjacent to the master bedroom, sleeping because Emily was up and down with the youngest baby and I had a 24-hour shift at the other next day. Around 2 a.m. I awakened, and was calmly super, aware, very awake. In the core, near of the room was a cluster of scintillating lights that was hovering near the ceiling. I acknowledged it, and immediately sat up and picked up the pad of paper beside the bed. I then wrote out the entire plan and concept for everything we have been doing for the last 15 years. This included the S-5 initiative protocols, the plans, everything. It was as if this scintillating light had awakened all the organization and plan within me and they were just pouring through me. This lasted for an hour or so, and then I went back to sleep and got up around 6 a.m. to work in the emergency department for 24 hours. It was then that I formed XETI, the Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, came up with that name, the concepts, the S-5 initiative, the need for disclosure, and the entire interplanetary ambassador program. All of it just unfolded in that one night. So things can come in packets of knowledge, all at once, mysteriously. Of course, I didn't know anybody and nobody knew me. I mean, I was just a country doctor in North Carolina with four kids and a golden retriever and a couple of cars in Biltmore Forest, just living my life. But these experiences made it clear, I must start working on this. But how do you take that vision and actualize it? We had to bootstrap the whole thing.